Hello, everyone, and welcome to the XCast X-Files Podwatch, episode 20. And these are our bite-sized looks at the X-Files as we head towards season 11, coming in 2018. Today, we're covering Dejan Dieverletst and Fresh Bones. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and I'm delighted to be joined by Clara Cook. Hi, Clara.
Hi, Carl. How's it going?
It's going well, thank you. Now, in an upcoming episode, we're recording some of these out of order, so there's a future episode coming up where Clara and I talk about how long it's been since we've talked to each other and stuff, but it won't make sense anymore because we're doing this one as well. So just disregard that in the future, listeners. Don't worry. It's an alternate timeline. All right, Clara. So we're in mid-season two here, getting on towards late season two. I think it's quite an interesting time for the series. What do you think?
Yeah. So this is, the mythology is really starting to kick in around this time, isn't it? I mean, it's been going before, but it's all become a lot more serious, a lot more important. There's higher stakes now. Scully's fully involved. So yeah, it's getting really exciting.
Yeah, I agree. And we've got two interesting ones today. Let's see if we like them or not. So the first one is Dejan Dieverletst. This is episode 14 of season 2. This was first broadcast in January 1995, written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, and directed by Kim Manners. This is the episode with a devil-worshipping parent-teacher council in a small town in New Hampshire. All right, so I'll just throw it over to you, Clara, to start us off. What do you think about this episode overall? General thoughts?
I love this episode. I think it's one of the best of season 2. In fact, I would actually go as far as to say I think it's one of the best of the X-Files altogether, actually. I think the teaser is really hilarious. It's really darkly comic. You know, it's a PTA meeting. Actually, it's not a PTA, right? It's like a teacher council, isn't it? Like a school council. So there's some parents as well, but it's mainly teachers. Council meeting with a actor who is recognisable from Frasier, who plays, I think, Bulldog in Frasier.
Yes,
so
yes,
it's
that's right.
Dan Butler, the actor. So he's, you know him for being quite a sort of family-friendly character, and here he is, you know, playing a Satanist. He's leading a council, and you think, I mean, they're objecting to sort of like the student musical, which is going to be Jesus Christ Superstar. And you think they're going to be like strict Christians or something. And it turns out they're all devil worshippers. So the principal joke here in this episode is to examine the way religious faith has been neglected and sort of watered down so that people choose to follow certain religious practices that are convenient for them in fitting with their life rather than following a faith fully. Except that the joke here is it's not Christianity, which is what I think normally people would apply this to. Yes. And the joke here is that it's devil worship.
Yeah, I was going to mention the sort of satirical element of this as well. And I think it works incredibly well, like you say. This was a significant episode from a production standpoint for a couple of reasons. So this was the first episode directed by Kim Manners. And he goes on to be the most prolific of the X-Files directors, with the greatest number of individual episodes directed. But also, it's the first farewell of Glenn Morgan and James Wong. So they now leave the series to run their own show, Space Above and Beyond. And then they return for season 4 for a few episodes, and to work on Millennium. And then many years later, they come back for season 10 and 11. But I think the way Morgan and Wong approached this was kind of like, this is like throwing everything in except the kitchen sink, because they'd had this idea, which was kind of the genesis for the episode in a way, which was that then it needed to work up to a point where a snake eats a man. And they had that visual in mind, and they said, you know, end of act 3, snake eats a man. And then everything else sort of flew from there. But then you've also got all the stuff like frogs falling from the sky and the anti-clockwise water draining down the sink. And there's all this kind of disparate imagery, which in lesser hands, I think all that stuff could seem a bit kind of fragmented or something. It wouldn't work well together, but I think it really does.
Yeah, it's all quite darkly comic. So the frogs falling from the sky, it comes straight after Scully's like being completely skeptical about it being anything being strange or weird in the area. And then frogs fall from the sky. And you just see the look of like disbelief both on her and Mulder's face, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
I actually really like the snake scene as well. And it's more exciting knowing that the actual actor was terrified of snakes. And he looks pretty terrified. I'm thinking he's not acting in this scene. So the actual sweat on his face is like real sweat. Like the makeup department didn't have to spray him with, you know, I don't know what they would do, sticky water or something to make him look scared and nervous. I just think it's great. It's funny. It's darkly comic. It's wonderfully filmed. The lighting and the camera angles of the characters are just really, really wonderful. The characters' faces are filmed up close, especially the Satan worshippers when they're talking.
Mm.
And the camera pulls out. It comes in very, very close. So almost like as part of the conspiracy of people talking about, you know, their unorthodox practices, and then the camera pulls out. It's both like creepy and hilarious at the same time.
I think this is the best of a certain type of episode, which is that you get these X-Files episodes. I think it's more common in the early seasons, but I need to go and count. I haven't really done the maths on that. But episodes where Mulder and Scully are always a couple of steps behind and they're kind of being led around, and you know, the case itself is not particularly meaningful to them. Their sort of job in the narrative is to further the plot. And sometimes that can make for quite an unappealing episode. But here I think it works kind of gangbusters. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, and there's lots of in-jokes there, you know, because like James Wong and Glenn Morgan obviously thought they were saying goodbye. So the writing on the blackboard at the end, which is written by the very, like the literal substitute teacher from hell, you know, she's like a devil. She's basically a messenger of the devil, isn't she? She writes, "Goodbye, it's been nice working with you." You know, so that it's a Mulder and Scully, and you know it's the writers writing that. You know, so there's all sorts of little details in the episode where you know that the writers are sort of almost parodying themselves a little bit. There's a character, a young teenage girl who is recounting abuse that she's been going through, and her abuse just gets more and more extreme. And you're thinking, how could this even be humorous? It's an awful idea, but. You know, I mean, her abuse just gets more and more extreme. You know, I had a sister and they sacrificed my sister, and then I've had 5 children and they took every single one of my babies away, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And Scully and Mulder just look a little bit like, whoa, you know, we're kind of out of our depths, you know. and I think you're thinking that I took it as the writers were parodying that kind of scene that they'd probably written in other X-Files episodes before.
I think that's quite a remarkable scene, you know, because if I remember rightly, there's like a long extended take on the actress. Yeah, like you say, the story just ramps up in sort of intensity and detail. And yeah, I don't, that seems like quite like a high wire act for me, you know. It is absurd, but it doesn't play as absurd. Do you know what I mean? It never stops being gripping, I don't think. And of course, we've got this figure of Mrs. Paddock, the substitute teacher, like you said. I think one thing I noticed is that I think lightning strikes every time, or you hear the sound of thunder, sorry, every time her name is mentioned, which is quite a nice touch as well.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, that bit.
And there's all that stuff with like the dissection and the heart in the desk drawer and stuff, and some of the imagery is really sort of stark and quite striking.
And I think like one of those little bit characters right at the beginning of the episode, which is the Sheriff John Oakes, who's played by Larry Musser. And Larry Musser is, he's the law enforcement in Chinga. And he's also in Jose Chung's From Outer Space.
And he's also the right-wing militia guy in Unrequited, which we've already recorded.
And it just is like his reaction to, you know, the murder in the woods and talking to Mulder and Scully. He's just like, you know, it sort of feels weird here. You know, there's just something that's weird about this place. And then Mulder afterwards sort of saying to Scully, like, you know, obviously this has been exaggerated, but... like, he's not wrong. Like, that's this weird feeling. And Scully's like, yeah, yeah. And that's when frogs start falling from the sky. So there's a real comic timing in the episode, I think. And I think, like, the lightning striking when they keep mentioning the substitute teacher, Miss Paddock, it's the same sort of comic timing, you know. But both Mulder and Scully seem kind of immune to it. They seem to just be kind of swept up in the tide of events. There is a really lovely moment in the show, which, I mean, I really like, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. But it's when they're tied up and they're in the shower and they're going to be sacrificed by the Satanist, basically a sacrifice to the devil. They both think they're going to be shot. And Mulder sort of throws his body over Scully's to try and protect her. Mm. And I think that's a perfect moment for the series too. Like, it's, you know, cementing that they actually are a team and that he's willing to protect her.
Mm.
And at that point in the series, it sort of makes sense after everything that they've been through.
And it's good as well, isn't it? Because in another series, you'd probably then get a scene with dialogue where they sort of acknowledge that and stuff. But often in the X-Files, it's kind of... the gesture itself suffices, doesn't it? So it doesn't have to be talked about ad nauseum afterwards. The viewer's got to sort of really pay attention to the way the characters act and move and so on.
Yeah, and I think probably a lot of that sort of stuff is not even written in the script. It's just improvised by the character actors at the time. And I mean, we'll go on to talk about this, obviously, in later episodes when, you know, we review or we look at Milagro, about how these characters started out with no sort of real... Deliberately, Chris Carter didn't want them to be a romantic pairing. And then over time, these characters sort of took on a life of their own and developed this chemistry. And it's through little moments like this that are laid out in like season one and season two, where they're taking care of each other, even in a platonic way, that sort of led to the characters sort of, I would say, speeding out of Chris Carter's control, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think you are right. And like you say, Milagro, in many ways, is about that. In this episode, just maybe finally, you've already touched on it. There's that idea. I think it's encapsulated by Mulder when he says, did you really think you could call up the devil and expect him to behave or something like that? I think one of the ironies actually is the way I read it. I think it's the kids in the woods who call up the devil, not the parent-teacher council who think they've done it. But I think it's the kids in the woods at the start who actually set the ball rolling. It's a very powerful idea that a religion, you know, if you took everything literally in following a faith, it would lead you down some sort of strange paths, wouldn't it? And this episode's a very interesting cautionary look at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Satanists seem quite reasonable and normal, to be honest. I mean, Jim Osbury, who is played by Dan Butler, when he describes and explains his faith to Mulder, it doesn't actually seem that unreasonable. He doesn't seem like a bad person. But I think the idea is that Miss Paddock is not happy with that. I think she feels that they've neglected their faith over the years and deserves to be taught a lesson. So and they are, so.
Because I think they indicate that, like, the parent-teacher council guys, they think it's, you know, it's about status in the town for them and stuff. The religion's one thing, but it's their way of becoming these pillars of society or something like that. Well, let's move on from DeHandy, but let's turn to the next one, which is Fresh Bones. So, Fresh Bones is the 15th episode of Season 2. February 1995 is when it was broadcast for the first time. And this episode was written by Howard Gordon and directed by Rob Bowman. This is the episode in which Mulder and Scully investigate the death of a soldier and they discover evidence that voodoo practices may be involved. Okay, Clara, so general thoughts, first of all, on Fresh Bones, please.
I actually quite enjoyed this episode, rewatching it. I can say I've always enjoyed it, though. I think in the past, I actually found it really frightening when I was younger. So I think it was one of those episodes that gave me nightmares, because there are some real horror moments in it, actually. And also, I found it quite middling. It just seems kind of slow in the middle, and I think I got bored when I was younger. But this time, I did really enjoy it. The teaser, I think, is really good. Although they have a very small, this is a side note, but they have a very small child in the beginning of the teaser who is very, very realistic at crying. And I worry a little bit how they made that little child actor cry. You know, I mean, it just seems, the baby seems to cry almost just spontaneously. It's creepy. The special effects are good. Like the maggots in the cereal bowl are especially creepy. The characters, I think, are all quite believable. Like Colonel Wharton is a good character. He's very credible as like a corrupt military leader. It's filmed well, the direction, the lighting, even the music with the sort of wailing voodoo voice I thought was quite effective. There's a real contrast between the sort of American military base and the foreign folklore of the voodoo of the Haitian refugees. And both Mulder and Scully seem genuinely spooked, actually, I think. I think for the majority of the episode, they seem pretty spooked by what's going on and a bit out of their depths, and I quite liked that. But there were some really strange things, like, why is Mr. X in the movie? In the episode. Why is Mr. X in the episode? I mean, what is he there for? For what purpose? And he doesn't really say anything or help Mulder with the case, really. I'm not sure why he would be interested in this small X-file, because it doesn't feel like a big mythology episode. I just felt like it lost its pacing somehow in the middle of it.
I think I agree with that, but it sort of comes to this quite frightening climax, doesn't it? Where there's a moment where Scully's hand kind of... somebody climbs out of her hand. Bizarrely, that's quite an unexpected moment. I think that's quite scary. Yeah, so you end up with this quite an unusual climax, and like I say, some of the stuff in the middle is a bit slow. But yeah, you talked about like the juxtaposition of this military base and the voodoo customs and stuff, which I found quite effective, to be honest. That guy who plays Colonel Wharton, he's called Daniel Benzali, and I always remember him. He was the lead actor in a series that was only on for a short time, called Murder One. He was like the lawyer.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
Yeah, he was excellent in that. So I'm always pleased to see him pop up in stuff.
Yeah, and I think like you said, the scene at the end with the man climbing out of Scully's hand. One of the things that really freaked me out about that scene as a kid, and even watching it now, is her eyes. You know, she looks over at Mulder. Yeah. She watches Mulder leave the car, and then she sort of looks over her shoulder, and you suddenly, her eyes look really big, and you think, well, she's really frightened. And then she turns back, you know, into the car, like sort of looking at the windscreen or looking at the rearview mirror, and you realise that it's not just her eyes are big, her pupils are like huge, you know, like her irises are black. I think they must have had Gillian Anderson wear contact lenses or something, because it's really creepy. And just that sort of the fact that her eyes have changed. And then, of course, yeah, you said like a man climbs up her hand and you're thinking, how's that even possible? But actually, it's really well and like done. It's really effectively done. And it's something I think it's truly like something out of a horror movie. And you don't really see that much stuff in The X-Files that's really like that. You see, you know, there's frightening things like there's murderers and there's, you know, supernatural scary stuff and there's, you know, aliens. And there's a lot of stuff that I think is really gross, like Leonard Betts or Tombs, that kind of thing. But there's something truly, truly horrible about this scene.
That's a very disturbing moment, I think. I mean, this was 1995, but like the stuff in here about like the treatment of migrants and, you know, is still quite relevant, really. X kind of alludes to it, I think, when he turns up, when he's talking to Mulder about how the political climate has sort of dictated this. But, you know, here we are 22 years later or something, and I'm not sure the situation's got that much better in terms of the way migrants are treated in some countries.
No, you're right about that. And there's also another aspect of this story, which I think is still a big problem now, which is cultural appropriation. So cultural appropriation is when you, I mean, obviously most people don't do it in this way. Most people do cultural appropriation through probably, I imagine, what they're wearing or what they say and stuff like that. I mean, most people aren't doing it through the use of voodoo, but it's when you take another culture and you use it without any sort of understanding of the significance of where that aspect of that culture comes from. Like wearing a Native American Indian headdress at a festival without understanding the importance of what a Native American Indian headdress means to a Native American Indian tribe. It's a similar thing with this. I mean, like the colonel is he's culturally appropriating this voodoo, and he's doing it to cover up his misdemeanors, to cover up the fact that he's been treating these refugees badly. And the main character, the main voodoo practitioner, I think what I thought at the end that he was sort of implying when he was talking to the colonel at the very end of the episode was that voodoo itself isn't actually a bad thing, you know, the voodoo isn't evil, it's the way you use it. And the colonel was using it for dark purposes, and so in the end it was going to come back on him in a dark way. And Balvay himself wasn't using it for dark purposes. So that is why the colonel ends up in a box at the end of it, like, you know, alive, screaming, buried up beneath the ground. And I thought it was a nice touch, you know, that he stole these people's culture and he imprisoned them. And now through that action, he's been imprisoned himself and he's buried alive. I feel this isn't very preachy. Mulder and Scully aren't used as tools to preach about something. They're just as confused as like the soldiers are. And I think that's why the episode's a bit different. You know, they're sympathetic but to the refugees, but they're just kind of caught up in it all, really, aren't they?
And also it ends with the, you know, the classic X-Files unresolved ending where Mulder and Scully find out that the boy they'd been talking to, he died some time ago, but yet he's been talking to them, what's going on? And they don't really know as the episode ends. They're confused.
Yeah, poor Scully and Mulder. They spend a lot of time and a lot of episodes being confused. But that's the X-Files. That's, you know, the truth is confusing, you know?
It is. The truth is very confusing. And tomorrow on the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch, two big mythology episodes that may or may not be confusing. Let's find out. So tomorrow it's Colony and Endgame. Well, thanks, Clara. You'll be back with me for some third season episodes before too long. But in the meantime, listeners, come and find us on Twitter at the X_cast. Please find us on Facebook. Our group's called X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. But until next time, trust no one.